Imagine if today was the day your idea changed someone's life. Imagine if you could help someone pay for college, help your community build a new playground, or help a child make it to that dream competition. With GoFundMe, it's all possible. GoFundMe is the world's number one fundraising platform trusted by over 190 million people. Every week, ordinary people meet their goals and do extraordinary things. Your ideas matter. GoFundMe isn't just for emergencies. Want to raise money for your kid's soccer team or raise funds for a small business, a creative project, or event? GoFundMe helps you turn ideas into reality. And help adds up. Fundraisers you start for someone else raise up to 5 times more. So think right now, who could use your help? Change rarely comes from waiting. It comes from someone deciding, today I'll start. Don't wait for someone else to bring change. Today, start your fundraiser in just minutes at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com to start your fundraiser. GoFundMe.com. This is a commercial message brought to you by GoFundMe.
Hey, Trailblazers. This is Jason, your host of the Trailblazing Texas podcast. Before we jump into our latest episode, I've got some incredible news for you. Are you gearing up for your next big hike or backpacking trip? Well, we at Trailblazing Texas Podcast have partnered up with Trekker Joe's, the ultimate Texas outfitter, to bring you something I feel absolutely special. Listeners, you of the Trailblazing Texas Podcast can now get a one-time 15% off their gear purchases at Trekker Joe's. That's right, whether you're a first-time customer at Trekker Joe's or a repeat customer like me, you can save big and hit the trails well-prepared. So upon checkout, use code TTP15 to claim your 15% discount and in the process support an amazing local Texas business. So happy trails and don't forget to tell your hiking buddies. Now on with the episode. Welcome to the Trailblazing Texas podcast, where we embark on a journey through our diverse Texas landscapes and breathtaking trails while always engaging with our amazing Texas hiking community. So settle in, tighten up those bootlaces, and get ready for the thrilling tales awaiting for you on this episode. So as you mentioned earlier, you know, you didn't stop your through hike of the AT, you just paused it. What was that moment like for you when you came to that realization that, yeah, you know, it's time to go back home?
Well, I've always said that, you know, through hiking, you know, long distance hiking is more mental than it is physical. Whenever you are doing a long distance hike like that, you start getting into shape and you start getting, your body starts getting used to, you know, the grind that it goes through. But the hardest part of a through hike is the mental and emotional. And so I had just, my oldest grandson was graduating from high school, and I knew I was going to have to come back to California from the East Coast to go to his graduation. And so anyway, I got a ticket and I was hoping to fly in, go to the graduation and then fly back so I wouldn't, you know, kind of get used to being off trail. But it didn't work. I had to get a ticket and I think it was like 3 weeks, almost 4 weeks before I could fly back. I had to get a round trip ticket. And so anyway, I got home and I started spending time with my family and my grandkids. And I started sleeping in a real bed, eating real food. And, you know, I just got out of the through hike mentality. And so when I got back on trail, it was just so hard to get back in the swing of things like that. And then, you know, because I took off so much time off of trail, I got into Parrisburg and I sat down. I said, all right, you know, Rev, you're gonna have to figure out where you are and then figure out, okay, if you do like 20 miles a day, where will you be, you know, at the end of your hike, or are you going to be able to finish it? And so anyway, I figured out where I was and where I should be in order to finish by. And another thing is I set an arbitrary date of finishing by September the 1st. Now, again, that was not a, you know, it wasn't impossible when I started. I started on April the 2nd. And so, you know, it was plenty enough time for me to finish. In fact, I figured that it would, if I did 14 miles a day, I would be able to finish in no zeros, which is impossible. But I figured if I did 14 miles a day, I'd be able to finish by September the 1st. And so that was kind of in my mind, you know, when I wanted to finish. I didn't want to go too much longer than that. And so anyway, I sat down and I figured where I was and where I should be in order to finish by September 1st. And I figured I was about 400 to 500 miles behind where I should be. And so anyway, the thought entered my mind, you're never going to finish by September 1st. And so that just kind of overwhelmed me. And it was kind of like, you know, kind of like the devil angel sitting on one shoulder and the godly angel sitting on the other shoulder. And the devil was just saying, you ain't going to be able to finish. You might as well just go ahead and go on home, you know. And so anyway, that mental, emotional, whatever you want to call it, started playing with my mind. And I lost all motivation. And so I remember, in, you know, getting out on the trail again and going, and oh, it was raining and I didn't get my tent up in time. And so I was all wet and everything. And so I was laying in my tent and I thought, you know, I'm just going to go home and I'll just, you know, continue where I left off, you know, and I'll continue next year, you know. So I called my wife and I told her my decision. She said, well, she said, if that's what you feel like you need to do, then, you know, go ahead and do it. And so anyway, I hiked back to where I started from that morning in Parrisburg. And I got on the phone and called my airline and or American Airlines and got a ticket back home. But yeah, it was really bad. Now, to be honest with you, I was only home for maybe like a week when I thought to myself, you know, what have you done? You know, you could have gone as far as you could and just maybe, you know, got in some more miles and stuff like that and maybe not finish the trail, but at least gone as far as you could. But I'm telling you, Jason, the mental part of through hiking is so much stronger than the physical part. And that's what happened. I got bummed out. I got demotivated, if that's a word. And I just decided, hey, I'm going to just throw in the towel. And that's what I did.
So I had not a through hike, but we had it was 114 mile hike through New Mexico down into Texas through the Guadalupe Mountains, and we were going to dump out at this highway leading up to the, you know, to this trip. Like the day before, we were out caching water in New Mexico. Well, Todd had already cached the water in New Mexico, but we were up in the Guads because there's no water out there, so we were caching. And it was, you know, probably 20s and 30s just Fahrenheit, just perfect weather for the Guads, because even if it's freezing, there's no shade hardly, and that sun is just cooking you. And so it was awesome. Man, the next day it was up in the 80s, and, you know, starting through the Guadalupe Ridge Trail up in New Mexico, there is no shade. Mm-hmm. And so we made it about 70 miles. We got into McKittrick Canyon. We stopped. We were sitting on the porch at Pratt's cabin, and Todd and I just looked at each other, and I just looked at him and said, I'm done. Like, I never thought that I would just cave into the mental aspect. Yeah. And it was easy. I just said, I'm done.
Yeah.
And, you know, we were expecting weather in the 20s and 30s. It's in the 80s. It's hot for the quads. The sun's just cooking you. And as soon as I said that, Todd goes, "That's all I needed to hear. I'm done too. Let's go." And
yeah.
And you're exactly right. The moment that I got home, so it's a 10-hour drive for me to get home from the quads, I started going, "What in the heck did I just do? How could I have let that mental weakness, I guess you could, for lack of a better term, dictate the end of a trip? We were not in any danger. Of course it's hot, but we had, tons of water cached all over the park. It was just like, I guess, just the discomfort. We just said, yeah, we're done.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm telling you, when you lose that motivation, you're done for. It affects your body, really.
Yeah.
But you got to be motivated to, I mean, what else causes you to make your body get up at 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning, put your headlamp on, get out of your sleeping bag, pack everything up and start hiking before the sun comes up, and then, and not stopping? I mean, what is it that causes your body to go through what you put it through, except for that mental motivation that you have? You got to be motivated.
Yeah, absolutely.
And when you lose that motivation, that's it.
And man, I was so disappointed in myself. And I mean, even on the drive home, I called my wife Lori, and I'm like, "Yeah, we're pulling it because of the heat and stuff." And I as I'm telling her this, I'm just thinking, what did I just do?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
So if you look at the AT pause, we'll call it. Was there anything that the trail gave you, even though you didn't finish? Is there any, lessons learned or experiences, growth?
Oh yeah. I mean, good night. 636 miles is what I did of the AT, the first 636 miles. And so, good night. Yeah, I learned all kinds of things. I guess the biggest thing that I learned is that you cannot compare trails. Okay. My first trail, my first love, was the Pacific Crest Trail. I mean, it's right in my backyard. And so I decided, I retired in 2017. I'd been pastoring for 41 years. And so I decided if I'm going to do a long distance through hike, I was going to have to retire, because it's kind of hard to, be gone from your congregation for about 6 months, And I don't think they would take very kindly to me taking off for that long. So anyway, yeah. I had to retire in 2017. And so I got all my ducks in a row and everything. And so, and then 2020, I took off and started hiking the PCT. But it was a different trail than the AT. And I knew that going into it. But I guess I just got overwhelmed by it. The first 700 miles of the Pacific Crest Trail is like it is in Texas. It's wide open. It's expansive. You climb to the top of a mountain and you can just look out and see forever. When you're on the AT, you do a climb of 3,000 feet, you get to the very top, and all you see is a bunch of trees, Now, again, a lot of people, they get really bummed out by that and say, "Man, I'm in a green tunnel. Is there the sun out? Is there any kind of views up here?" But that's just the way the AT is, There are some beautiful views on the AT. But the majority of it is a green tunnel. And so I had to, realize that I people ask me, they say, "Well, what should you like better, the AT or the PCT?" That's like asking who's your favorite child. You know, you don't have any favorite children, you know?
None that you would admit to on a podcast.
Yeah, right. Or to them, you know. But you know, every trail's different. I did the Ireland Way, and it's 629 miles, I think over 1,000 kilometers from the very southern part of Ireland to the very top of Ireland to the North Atlantic up in Ireland. And but it was just totally different. It rained almost all the time. You would hike through bogs, and I mean, you'd get up to your ankles and your knees, and it just, you know, just bog is what they call it over there. You hike through farmers' fields and stuff like that. I mean, it's just so different. There's a lot of road walking. It's, you know, so different than the PCT or the AT. And then again, I did the I did a through hike of the Pinhoti Trail, and it's very, very similar to the AT. But every trail is different. You can't compare them.
No,
it's just different environments, different perspectives and stuff like that. And so that was the one big thing that I learned, is that, hey, it's not going to be the same as the PCT. You're just going to have to accept it for what it is.
Yeah. And, you know, kind of hearing the story about your attempt to through hike on the AT, and now you're back and kind of can think about it.
Mm-hmm.
Has it changed how you define a success on a trail, like that whole experience? Meaning that, you know, you stopped it, you paused it, everything that you faced, but you still got stuff out of it, right? Like it was still.
Yeah, I don't know. You know, I've always heard that, you know, you're only a failure when you don't get back up again, when you fall. And so that's why, you know, I did a video on why I paused my through hike of the AT instead of saying I quit. Because when you quit, you quit. You don't do it anymore. Well, you know, in next year, 2026, I'm going to resume, which means you're going to start again. And so that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to resume my through hike of the AT. And you know, again, I've seen a lot of people that have had to quit a through hike, or I'm sorry, had to pause their through hike, and they make a video and they say why I quit the AT. Well, I didn't quit it. I'm still going to do it next year. Now, when I finish the AT, then I'll be able to say that I completed the AT. But for right now, I'm on pause. It's just
You know, I think I have a good friend in Washington State, John, and he kind of taught me a lesson, because, or he was just tired of listening to me complain. But I had a goal to climb slash hike the 10 highest peaks in Texas. And some of it is a little bit of climbing and, you know, route navigate, no trails. And it's, you know, some of it's pretty tough to get to.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there was a point in this journey where, you know, it was just failure after failure after failure. And so I was on the phone with him and just saying, man, it's just, you know, I only have this amount of time to get out to the quads. You know, you don't want to be out there in the summer because it's hot, like deadly hot. And, you know, I had this limited amount of time. You meet people and they're into it, and you kind of like subconsciously vet them. Like, okay, mm-hmm. Are they going to be worth it, and, or, you know, facilitate the success?
Mm-hmm.
And just kept having failures after failures or not making the objectives. And he just said, hey, he goes, how boring would your adventures be if you were always successful?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, okay, John, you're right as always. And so You know, that really changed what I define success on a trail is.
Right.
And for me, it's not about the destination. It's totally about the journey. But, you know, as I'm getting older, I'm in my 50s. It's, to me, success is just getting out.
Yeah. Yeah. That's right.
Just, you know, getting my stuff together and just getting out. Because like you said, you know, sometimes there's Hallmark movies playing in the background. You got, you know, like there's so many things that grandkids, your kids, my, you know, and there's just so many things to, you know, that, you know, you could be doing. And it, to me, just making that time for ourselves and just getting out on the trail.
Well, I believe that, you know, that you learn more from your failures than you do your successes. And plus, you know, the Bible in the book of Proverbs, it says a just man falleth seven times, but riseth up again. The number seven in the Bible is actually the number of completion. In other words, what the Bible says is that every time a just man falls down, he gets up again, you know. And that's the key to success, is that when you do fall, and you're going to fall, you're going to fail, you're going to, you know, not succeed. But when you do, get back up again. You're only a failure when you stay down.
If you look at your hikes on the PCT and the AT, do you have any funny wildlife or weather stories that you could share with the listeners?
Let's see. Well, weather on the PCT, I hiked a little bit later in the year, and so it got very, very hot in the Mojave Desert. A lot of people mistake the PCT. In the first 700 miles is called the desert section of the PCT, but that's really a misnomer. It's really the Mojave. You only go through just a small portion of the Mojave Desert, and that's right before you get to Kennedy Meadows. It was so just extremely hot in that section, and I had ran out of water. I think I told this story last time we were on, but I'd run out of water, and so I got dehydrated. I got heat exhaustion, everything, and just stumbling around on the trail. And that's when I found that a gallon of water underneath a bush. And that's the only thing that really saved my life. But, you know, it can get really hot. In Texas, I mean, one of the good things about the AT being a green tunnel is that you don't have to worry about the sun beating down on you all the time. But boy, on the PCT, you know, especially during that desert section of the Mojave, the heat was just unbearable. Cold, I didn't really get real cold. It was a low snow year, the year that I did the PCT. And so I didn't experience a lot of cold weather and a lot of snow in the Sierras, which is a real bad, you know, it's a real bad circumstance that a lot of hikers have to go through the snow. And so I didn't have to experience a lot of cold weather. And then on the AT, I think there was just recently, there was just one night where it got down like in the 30s. My sleeping quilt worked good, and I had everything on. I mean, just everything on, and so that kept me warm. So heat, cold, rain. Oh my goodness, it rained only twice when I did my PCT hike, until I got to Washington. Of course, you know, Washington is known for just being rainy all the time. And when I got to Washington, and especially on the very end of the the hike. It rained just constantly. And we had to, there was a couple of guys that I hike with at the end of my journey, and it rained so much, and we were going up into the North Cascades, and so, you know, the rain would turn into snow, and so we decided to go into a little trail town called Winthrop, about 30 miles from the Canadian border, and just wait out a storm and everything, and then, you know, I think after 3 days, the storm subsided, and we went back on the trail and finished, you know, went to the terminus. And so rain, when I was on the Ireland Way, there was one time where it just rained constantly all day long. And my rain outfit wetted out. And
oh, no.
Yeah. And because, I mean, it was just... I was just trying to get as far as I could, and then it started getting dark and in nighttime, and the temperature just started dropping, and I started feeling hypothermia coming on. And I mean, you know when you're experiencing hypothermia, and I started shaking uncontrollably, and I just got so cold. And Jason, it was so bad that when I went by this farmhouse, now bear in mind, I mean, here's an American over in Ireland. I went to this farmhouse and I knocked on the door, and this guy came to the door and I said, "Sir," I said, "I am hiking the," of course she could tell that I wasn't Irish, you know, and I said, "I'm hiking the Ireland Way." And I said, I'm freezing half to death. I said, it's raining. I said, is there any way that I can just step inside your house so I can get out of the rain? You know, and he saw the desperation on my face. And really, I was going into hypothermia. And so he told me, he said, man, I really feel for you. And he said, I'd love to invite you in. He said, but my wife and I are just about to walk out the door. He said, we're celebrating our 25th anniversary, wedding anniversary. And he says, we've got an appointment or a reservation at a restaurant. And he said, we're just about to go out the door. I said, well, I understand. I said, I appreciate you, you know, being willing to let me come into your house here. I am a stranger. He said, but there is a hostel about 4 miles down the road. And he said, you know, you could go there, you know. I went, okay, 4 miles. I can do that. Yeah. And so I started taking off. And you know, the more you exercise and the more active you are, the more your body heats up. And so I thought, well, if I walk real fast and not run, but walk real fast for 4 miles, I can keep my body temperature up until I get to this hostel. So anyway, I found this hostel and I went to the door. And again, I told the guy, I said, look, I said, I don't have any reservations. Is there any way I can just come inside and stay here, you know, for the night? And he says, sure. He said, I don't have any rooms ready. He said, but I'll send my wife and we'll get a room ready and everything. And so
nice.
I walked in there and I mean, I was just shivering uncontrollably. And so anyway, when he finally got the room ready, I went in there, Jason, I took off all my clothes, jumped into the shower and turned the water on as hot as it could get and just stayed there until my body temperature rose. But that was scary. That was really scary. So those are a few weather related incidents that I experienced on my different trails. As far as wildlife,
I was going to ask you, if you could combine your PCT and AT hikes and add it up, and you got a nickel for every time you had a mouse encounter, would you be a bazillionaire?
Actually, I would be broke because
Oh, really?
I didn't have any, none.
Really?
And listen to this now.
Yeah.
I only hung. Now, of course, when you're in the Sierras, it's required. I think it's something like a $500 fine if they find you without a bear canister with your food in it in the Sierras. And so I had to carry a bear canister, of course, in the Sierras. But everywhere else, you don't have to do that, and you have to hang your food. Or they, you know, they suggested you hang your food. Jason, I hung my food one time on the whole PCT. I slept with it the rest of the time. Now, here's the key, okay? See, I think the problem is a lot of these thru-hikers, they eat in their tent, they're very sloppy, and they don't store their food, you know, in Ziploc bags and stuff like that. And so, you know, good night. Mice and raccoons or, you know, whatever. I think Andrew Skirka calls them little bears. But little bears, you know, they smell that and they come after it. And so what I've got is I always carry an OPSAC. Have you ever heard of that?
I have.
I think it's called odor-proof sack, but it's called an OPSAC. I always put all of my food in there and zip it up real good and sleep with it at night. And I had absolutely zero problems with little bears or big bears.
It's funny that was your experience. Cause you know, talking to John about, you know, all of the stuff that he's done up in Washington, he's like, man, those little mice will just chew through people's tents. Like within like no time. And all of a sudden, you know, you have mice running over your head trying to find stuff. And
I've heard.
So, yeah, that too, was.
Yeah.
Yeah. So any other wildlife experiences?
I didn't have any problems with that. Now, one time when I was on trail, in fact, it was really crazy. You see most of the bears in the Sierras on the PCT. But I saw a bear in the desert section. I was walking down the trail and I heard this big, loud snap, you know, it wasn't just a little twig. It was a big branch snap. And so I immediately looked to my right and there was this big bear. And I mean, his rear, all I saw was his rear end. Okay. But his rear end was, I mean, it was, you know, wide. So it was a big bear. And he saw me before I saw him. And so as soon as he saw me, he just scooted out of there as quick as he could. And so he was running away from me. But man, I mean, when I saw him, the hairs on my body just stood on end, man. I was so freaked out by seeing it, you know. One time years ago when I first started hiking, I hiked up in the Sierras, and I think it was around the Lake Tahoe area, around in there, which is notorious for bears. I pitched my tent, and it was really kind of rainy and windy that night, but something woke me up in the middle of the night, and I heard this snorting, you know, just like you said, you heard the bison, you know, that big snort and everything.
Yeah.
I heard that in my tent. And so I thought, now I was in the Sierras. And so I had a bear canister and it was about 100 yards away from my, or not 100 yards, 100 feet away from my tent. So I didn't have any kind of food and anything in my tent. But what it was is the bear was just, you know, he was sniffing around my tent to see if he could smell any food and stuff like that. And he didn't. And so he left. But, man, I was in my sleeping bag and I thought to myself, well, Lord, I guess I'm coming home tonight.
Man. But, you know, and it like, what are you going to do?
Nothing.
Yeah. It's like that bison. Yeah, he was smelling at my tent. I'm literally thinking, like, what am I going to do? Nothing. Just I'm going to be the butt of a bunch of jokes if he kills me.
Yeah. So, wow. And then I guess the only other thing, I didn't see a lot of animals really on the PCT. I mean, it's crazy, but you know, I saw deer, and I did see a couple of wolves just for a brief minute, man. It just, you know, went out, went across the trail. And, of course, I saw, you know, red fox and, you know, different animals, and raccoons, skunks, and stuff like that. But not very many on the PCT. I only saw, now a lot of people, when they do the PCT, you know, they talk about, oh man, I saw 30 rattlesnakes, you know. I saw two. One of them was in the desert section. And again, he was more afraid of me than I was of him. And so he was backing up the whole time when I went by. And then up in Washington, of all places, I saw a rattlesnake on the side of the trail, a timber rattler. But other than that, I didn't see a lot of, you know, wildlife and stuff.
With all your experience of through hiking, what would be your advice that someone has this idea to go on a through hike, not a Texas Lone Star Hiking Trail through hike, but a real proper, you know, 2000 mile plus through hike, but maybe is a bit scared to kind of take those steps? What advice would you give them?
Well, what I did is, you know, whenever I caught the through hiking bug, you know, and decided that I wanted to do a long distance through hike. Now, why in the world I I decided, you know, I think I might go 2,653 miles. You know, that was dumb on my part. But I said to myself, you know, I'm gonna work up to it slowly. So I said to myself, there's a place called, I'm trying to remember, it's down in San Jose, California. I think it's called Samuel P. Taylor State Park. It's one of the largest state parks in California. But anyway, it got a lot of real nice hiking trails, and you can stay overnight and stuff like that. And so I said to myself, I'm going to go down there and I'm going to just spend one night in the wilderness and come back home. And so I did that. And again, I was pastoring at the time. And so I only had between Monday and Wednesday, we had a Wednesday night service. And so I only had just a few days where I could be away from my congregation. And so anyway, I did that. And so I was pretty successful. You know, I learned how to put my tent up, and I learned, you know, how to cook the food and, you know, all the stuff that hikers do. And then I said to myself, okay, next month I'm going to try two nights. And so I planned a two-night trip. So I went out there two nights. And then, you know, the next month I said, well, I'm going to try three nights. And so I did three nights. So anyway, I worked my way up to five nights. So I said to myself, if I can spend the night, you know, away from my house and in the wilderness for 5 days, then I could actually do a through hike, because basically that's what a through hike is. It's 5 days out in the wilderness, and then you go into a trail town. You know, you get a motel room or you go to the hostel or whatever, and you resupply and you charge up all your electronics and stuff like that. And then you go back on the trail again. So basically a through hike is just, you know, a bunch of 5 day section hikes is what I, so anyway, when I did succeed with doing it for 5 days, I said, well, you know, if I can stay here for 5 days, I can do a through hike. And so the year before I started in 2019, before I did my through hike of the PCT in 2020, I said to myself, I'm going to do Section K, which was close to me, from Echo Lake to Donner Pass. It's about 72 miles. It's Section K of the Sierra section of the PCT. I said to myself, I'm going to do that section of the PCT. And if I can do that, then I think that I could probably do the whole trail. And so I did it, and I was successful at it. So then the next year I got a permit and then, you know, took off on the thru hike. And so my advice to, you know, potential thru hikers is just to take it slow and just work your way into it and see how long you can stay out. And then, like I said, if you can stay out 5 or 6 days in the wilderness, you can do a thru hike, you know.
You know, sometimes you catch people making videos that are taking, you know, going to attempt to do a thru hike, and like they start the trail and like have no idea how to set up their tent or what the purpose of some of their gear is. I'm just amazed that.
Well, when I did the PCT, you know, the first stop is called, what is that creek? My mind just went blank. I was just there a couple of weeks ago, but anyway, it's about 15 miles from the Mexico border, on the PCT. And I was hiking next to this guy, and he had never put up his tent. In fact, he had never taken his tent out of the packaging.
Are you kidding me?
Yes. And he was starting his thru hike. And I said, you've got to be kidding. You've got to do, they call them different things, shakedown hikes.
Yeah, gear shakedowns. Hikes, whatever. Yeah.
You've got to do that before you attempt to do a 2,600 mile hike. You've got to do it.
You know, and also like it's setting yourself up for success. Like everything on the trail is against you.
Yes.
You know, like put yourself in a situation to be successful. You should have just said, look, it's too late now, but start watching my videos on YouTube.
Yeah. And I'm glad you brought that up. That's another thing. I watch videos of successful thru hikers constantly. And I wouldn't just, you know, oh, that's pretty, you know, that's pretty scenery and I can't wait to see that or whatever. But no, I watched them like a hawk. I mean, I looked at them. Yeah. I'd say, okay, you know, how did they do their pack and you know, their trekking poles and their shoes, what shoes are they wearing? And, you know, I tried to notice every little detail because I figured out if they were successful at their thru hike, if I do what they do, maybe I'll be successful as well.
No.
And so, I just watched YouTube videos constantly and I still do.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. So this is actually a perfect timing that we're recording this last part of the episode. You know, we did the first 2 hours, what was it, about 3, 4, 5 weeks ago, and now we're wrapping up with this one. You just celebrated your 5-year anniversary of hiking the PCT, yeah, and you did a little section to celebrate. So my first question is, what kicked off the idea to celebrate and get on the trail and you know, how all that kind of came to be?
Well, I lived in Southern California for 2 or 3 years. I owned a condo for about 10 years when I was living up in the San Francisco Bay Area. But I owned a condo down in Southern California, and I rented it out during the summer, during the season, and so that I would have something to retire, you know, when I got to retirement age. And so when I got to retirement age, my wife and I moved down to Southern California and moved into our condo. And it gets so hot down there. We could only take about 2 or 3 summers. And we decided to move back to the Bay Area where it's a lot cooler. And so, but the thing about it is all of our doctors are down in Southern California, which is 500 miles from the San Francisco Bay Area where we live. And so what we try to do is we're trying to get all of our doctor's appointments around at the same time so that we can go down to Southern California, stay down there for about a month or two, and get all of our doctor's appointments, you know, taken care of at one time. And so while I was down there in Southern California with doctor's appointments, I thought to myself, I'd like to just start at the very beginning of the PCT. I'd never been back down there, you know, in 5 years since I started. I hadn't been back to it. So I thought, you know, that would be good. It's been 5 years since I've been to the Southern Terminus. And so I thought, well, maybe I'll, you know, take a little short hike. And so I decided to go about, you know, 40, 50, 60 miles of the PCT, you know, at the very beginning, just to celebrate my 5-year anniversary. And so while I was down in Southern California, I developed a good friend, a hiking friend, Mike Marmalade is his trail name, Lawrence. He lives down in the San Diego area. We've done, you know, some hiking before. Since I was down in Southern California, I invited him to come with me. And so we went together and did a hike from the Southern Terminus right there on the Mexican border to Mount Laguna, which is about 42 miles, something like that. Mm-hmm. So anyway, had a great time. You know, it wasn't a real strenuous hike or anything like that. So, but just to celebrate. And like I said, it was the first time I'd been back to that area in 5 years. And so a lot of nostalgia, you know, just flooded my soul, you know.
Yeah. So real quickly, does your friend have a YouTube channel that you could give a shout out to?
Yes.
So
yes.
Check it out.
Yes. His YouTube channel is Marmalade Outdoors. And okay. Just real good guy, real good hiker. Just a real good friend of mine.
Nice. Wonderful. So what was the expectations of the experience versus the reality? You know, the whole celebrating the 5-year anniversary, the 40-mile hike.
Like I said, it was very nostalgic. You know, like what was funny is I would get to an area and I'd say to myself, I remember that tree. I remember that rock, you know. And so, you know, you remember scenes that you went to or that you saw. And I don't know, it just kind of brought back those feelings of your first, you know, I call the PCT, you know, my first love, because that was my first through hike that I did. And so, you know, just like you remember your first kiss, you remember your first hug and stuff like that. You know, it's just when you're on the PCT or when I was, you know, doing that nostalgia hike, I guess, you know, those feelings just kind of came back on you and you thought, wow, this was great, you know.
But, you know, the video that you made of this, I watched it, and what was so neat about it is you have the today walking past that part of the trail, and then you have the old footage of you walking past that trail, like that moment or that part of the trail, that rock, that tree, that section. And it was neat to see, you know, the version of you on, you know, starting out on the PCT and then, you know, like you're 5 years later. That's a pretty spectacular video to the listeners. So definitely you have to check it out.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. I had one guy comment said, "Hey Rev, who is that beardless, young, skinny guy, you know, in the black and white figure?" And I said, that was my younger mini me, I guess, you know, but yeah, it was really funny. You know, I went back to the original, when I hiked it 5 years previous and took those clips and everything, and kind of juxtaposed how do you say that? Juxtaposition, juxtaposed, you know, seeing a like Highway 8 or Interstate 8 today, and what it looked like, you know, 5 yeah. years ago. But you know, Jason, at the very end of that that trip, it dawned on me, you know, that the trail really hasn't changed that much. Now, there were some changes, but it hadn't changed that much. I realized, well, what changed was me. You know, 8 months after I finished the PCT, I had a heart attack. And then 3 months after that, I had 3 stents put in my my heart, my right coronary artery. Then a year later, I had a stent put in my my aorta to relieve an aneurysm. And so all these things had happened to me in the previous, you know, in between the time that I finished the PCT until now. And I thought, man, I've come a long ways in 5 years. The trail hasn't. The trail's the same. But man, I sure have changed. Got older.
You mentioned that, like, this whole next section of the podcast was probably one of the most emotional for me that I've put together. You know, I had Mr. Barry came on episode 11 and 12, Lost Hiker at Guadalupe Mountains. Mm-hmm. He was lost for 5 days. Putting that episode together, I got a bit emotional. Mm-hmm. And then putting this last section of our podcast, and you know, you start to think, you know, at our age, mm-hmm. at some point, we won't be hiking and backpacking anymore.
Right.
Like, it'll all be over for us. So it was emotional to put this together, but I think it's also important for the listeners to hear, and also for the other hikers that are of our age, and maybe kind of going through this part will help them. You know, I think it helps to kind of give it some thought and kind of, I don't know, not move past it, but just embrace it and embrace it for what it is. Mm-hmm. and don't stop.
Yeah. I did a video on some things that motivates me personally when I do a through hike or a hike of any kind. What are some things that motivate me? And one of the things that I mentioned in the video is that I realized that there's a lot of people that would love to do what I'm doing right now, hiking a trail, getting out there and sleeping in the wilderness, but they can't because of health reasons. You know, I have a lot of people, a lot of subscribers that comment to me and they say, Rev, I could never do what you're doing, but I love that you're doing it because I'm living vicariously through you. Well, I mean, that motivates me.
Absolutely.
And one of the things that motivates me is that I'll do it as long as I can do it because I realize that one day I'm not going to be able to do it. And so you might as well do it while you can. And, and plus, another thing that kind of motivates me is, I know it's kind of funny, but one of my favorite movies is The Shawshank Redemption. I mean, it just really motivates me. But I love it when Red and what's the other guy's name? Andy Dufresne. When Andy Dufresne and Red are in the prison yard, and Andy Dufresne looks at Red and says, you know, it boils down to this. Either get busy living or get busy dying. And man, absolutely. I mean, whoa, that just,
yep.
just struck. And I thought to myself, that's the key right there. I can either sit down on my couch and live the rest of my years watching TV and you know, and letting my mind become mush and my body become mush, or I can get out and get on a trail and just go as far as I can on it. So the choice is up to you. You know, get busy living or get busy dying.
And so when I look at you, and you know, I've been following you for a while, you've accomplished, I would argue that you've accomplished more than probably most hikers even dream of. And, you know, kind of as you near the end of this hiking and backpacking journey, how have you started to process this shift? Or, you know, like maybe you're not able to do some of the things that you used to or want to do.
Well, it, believe it or not, you know, I can feel my age, you know, just from the PCT. At the end of the PCT, I'm not kidding you, Jason, I was in the best shape of my life. Now, I didn't know that I had a blockage. I had three blockages in my right coronary artery while I was hiking the PCT. I don't know if I shared this with you or with the your listeners, but the doctor said that I had developed coronary, I'm sorry, it's called collateral arteries, which they're arteries that actually your body grows to bypass blockages in your heart. And so while I was on the PCT, those arteries bypassed those blockages that I had. So, but I was in the best shape of my life. I mean, I was running up mountains and not even hardly breathing hard. But you know, when I did the PCT, when I did the AT, last year started it, I could just tell physically, I was walking up a little bit slower, not real slow, but a little bit slower than I normally would. It takes a little bit longer for my muscles to recover. You know, you used to, you know, you'd get to camp, you'd sleep and you'd eat, or you'd eat and then you sleep. And then the next day, you know, your muscles would recover and you'd just boom, hit the trail. But, you know, your muscles are really a lot sore the older you get. And so, yeah, I can tell that I'm aging a little bit, but I'm going to try to fight Father Time as hard as I can. You know.
So would you say there's a sense of peace settling in, or, you know, is there still a tug to get one more big trail in before you hang up the backpack?
Yes, there's always that tug to, you know, I've got one more trail left in me. You know, that's what a lot of people ask me. It says, hey, Rev, why don't you do this trail, or why don't you do that trail? You know, one of their favorite trails and everything. And I tell them, I said, well, that's on my bucket list. Hopefully I can get to it, you know, but I always have something. Whenever I get off of a trail, I'm always thinking to myself, okay, what's the next challenge? What's the next trail? And again, that kind of motive, that's one of the things that'll keep you from having that. A lot of people talk about post-trail depression, you know. Well, the best way to get rid of the post-trail depression is start planning another hike right after you get through with the previous hike. Yeah.
I tell you what, if I don't have a challenge or something that I'm looking ahead to, I'm laying in bed. You know, so yeah, I definitely totally understand what you're saying about that.
Yeah.
So this happened to me, Guadalupe Mountains. The listeners know it's my heaven on earth. It's my favorite place in the world. And I've hiked in a lot of places. I just love it. And I think we were talking before the podcast, whenever I leave the Guads, I'll get about 10, 15 miles away and I'll just park on the side of the road, open up my Outback, sit in the little cargo area and just look at her. You know, people are, you know, every once in a while somebody will drive by because there's not a lot of traffic on the roads and, you know, ask, hey, are you okay? Or, and I, most of the time I just weep because the park means so much to me that, is this the last time that I'll ever get to, you know, experience the trails and experience, you know, what that park means to me. So as you start to think about this, and have we been kind of talking about, you know, probably we can't perform like we used to, or this or that, do you find yourself being a little more reflective on the outings that you have than what you used to, or is it no change yet?
During the, I guess you'd call it the off season or something, you know, like October, November, I try to kind of finish up the hikes that I, small hikes as well as big hikes, you know, and so like from October to March or April is what I would call the hiking off season or something like that. I get nostalgic then and reflective, you know, on what. In fact, I'd like to do a video at the end of the year looking back on the previous year and all the accomplishments, you know, hiking accomplishments that I had in the previous year. And again, it kind of motivates you for the next year, you know. But yeah, you kind of get reflective. But again, you know, until I come to the day when I can't do a long distance hike or a hike of any kind, until I get to that day, I'm going to just constantly think to myself, okay, where are you going to go next? What's next? You know, yeah. And again, that kind of motivates you to keep on living.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, I know some people that, and you know, I know this one guy, he loves the PCT. And I mean, he just hikes it all the time, never any other trail. And I think to myself, you know, there are other trails out there. I love the PCT. And like I said, it's my first love. But there's other trails that I want to do, you know. And so you just have to constantly motivate yourself. Okay, what's next? What's next?
Yeah. What do you want your trail legacy to be, even if it's just amongst friends or people who know you best?
Who? man, that's a hard question. Well, you know, of course, you know, I'd like to leave a legacy to the coming generation. You know, I want them to be able to enjoy the outdoors like I'm enjoying now. That's why I take, you know, my grandkids, I love to take them out backpacking and overnight, so they can experience the same things that I have experienced. I guess, you know, if anything, I would want my legacy to be that he didn't quit when he got older, that he just kept doing it as long as he could.
Nice.
I guess that would be the biggest legacy that I have. You know, I guess, Jason, the one thing that really motivates me a lot is my dad was the hardest working person that I know of. He worked for the Coca-Cola Company in Mobile, Alabama, basically his whole life. And just put in long hours and just a real hard worker and was always in good shape. He had an accident on the job and had to have surgery. And the company basically kind of talked him into retiring early. I mean, he's only like 52 years old when he retired. And it really played with my dad because he was active his whole life and everything, and yeah. It really messed with his mind. And so he just basically gave up and he started just, you know, eating and not getting any exercise. And he started gaining a lot of weight and stuff like that. And of course that started affecting his joints and he couldn't get around, you know, very well. And so, you know, I would come, and again, I was living out of town, away from him at the time. And so when my wife and I and her family would come to visit him, you know, I'd tell him, I'd say, Dad, let's go out and, you know, walk around the block or walk around in the retirement home here and stuff like that. And he'd say, oh, not Mike, I just don't feel like it. You know, my knees, you know, hurt and stuff like that. And, oh, I would just beg him. I said, well, Dad, let's just walk to the end of the driveway, you know, just get active, you know. And he basically just gave up with life and just kind of threw in the towel early. And that has always kind of haunted me or motivated me that I don't want to do like that. I don't want to just sit back and do nothing. I want to try to challenge myself and just do as much as I can do. Yeah.
So what would you say to someone or what advice would you give to someone who's afraid that their best trail days are behind them?
I just do what you can. You know, there's some people that will never be able to do a long distance through hike, you know. And so I always tell my subscribers who comment, you know, on my YouTube channel, I tell them, just do what you can. You know, just say to yourself, every morning I'm going to get up and I'm going to walk around the block, you know. And then once you walk around the block and it doesn't hurt anymore, you know, say, well, you know, I'm going to go around two blocks. And so then the next morning, get up and go around two blocks. And then keep challenging yourself to do more than you did the previous day or the previous week, previous month or whatever. But just challenge yourself to do as much as you can.
Yeah. And, you know, and also to the listeners and just for us, like, you don't have to have this massive bazillion mile epic, not epic, whatever, but like, you don't have to have this massive thing to have a wonderful experience to, you know, short hikes, couple miles, you know, flat, no elevation to get out there and just hear the trees, hear the wind blowing through the trees, hear the birds. And some of my most memorable times in the quads are just one of the easiest hikes in the park, Smith Springs. You know, as soon as I get there, it's tradition. I go hike the 1 mile to the spring that's out in the middle of the desert, drink some of the water and just chill. And it's some of the most, you know, magical moments that I've ever had in the park.
Yeah. So yeah.
That would definitely be mine.
Yeah. Just do what you can. That's my philosophy.
Yeah. Yeah. And you think about it also, like, thinking that you have to have, like, don't give yourself excuses not to do it.
Right.
Like, oh, it's only going to be a mile. You know, that's all I can do. Who cares? Get out. Yeah. You know?
Yeah. You know, it's funny that you said that. I forgot where I was. I think I was taking like a short hike, maybe like a week or something like that. And I even forget. Oh, I know where I was. I was on the PCT, just doing a section hike. I forget. Somewhere in the Sierras, I think. Somewhere around in there. And I was walking down the trail. I was by myself. I was walking down the trail. And I saw this guy coming down from the mountains out of some woods and stuff. And the closer he got to me, I realized that he had what do you call those braces? You know, when people have polio and they have those metal braces in their walk. Yeah. And this guy had these metal braces on his legs and on his arms, and he was walking like this down the trail. And I looked at him and I thought, oh my goodness, you know, if he can hike, and I'm sure he wasn't doing a through hike, you know,
right?
But he was climbing these mountains and everything. I'm thinking to myself, here's this guy with polio probably, with these braces on his legs, on his arms, if he can do that, surely, surely I can do that. And so, you know, you have to find things that kind of motivate you to more than what you think you can do.
And get out of your head, right? We talked about earlier that mental battle.
Right. And
I try to talk myself out of, because I try to go hike every Sunday in the Lone Star Hiking Trail, and I come up with every excuse not to go, you know, everything. But the moment that I get on the trail,
yeah,
it's like, oh, thank you for not caving into all this.
Yeah,
you know, why not to go? So yeah, and how inspiring to see someone just slaying the trail, you know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
All right, as we start to wrap up, the last three questions. The first two are tradition that I always ask to hikers. So are you ready?
Yes.
No, these are good questions, not lightning round questions. All right. What is one piece of gear you would recommend to a new hiker or backpacker? So if I had nothing and I come to you and say, Rev, I've watched your videos and you are so inspiring. I want to get into this, but what is one piece of gear that is a must for me to get right? What would it be?
I guess your backpack, because you have to use that to carry all your stuff. But you know, in the big mistake, and I made this mistake when I first got back into backpacking, is you always want to get a bigger pack than you actually need, you know. And so therefore, when you do that, automatically you think to yourself, man, I got this 70-liter pack. I got to get some stuff to fill it up with, you know.
Yep.
And then, you know, then you're carrying 50 or 60 pounds around with you. So, yeah, I would think a good lightweight backpack would be the one piece of gear that I would suggest that hikers get. And really do their research. You know, where the pockets are, you know, where your water bottle pockets and things like that, and the mesh pocket on the back or the front, whatever you call it, and the you know, whether it's a frameless pack or a, you know, pack that's got like a trampoline on the back or whatever, you know, do your research and get a backpack. But again, do not get a backpack that's bigger than you think you'll need. Otherwise, I guarantee you'll have a tendency to start putting stuff in there just to fill it up. And that's what you definitely don't want to do.
It's funny you say that, because my good friend John, his wife, Megan, she worked at a state park in Alaska, and then she just decided after she graduated, she's going to do the PCT.
Mm-hmm.
So she, you know, she went to REI, and the gentleman, oh. We recorded, I don't remember what episode she was, but we had three or four episodes with her talking about her hiking experience. And she said, yeah, she went into REI and the guy talked her into do the PCT, an 85-liter backpack.
No. I'm sure that salesman probably had done the PCT before. Yeah, right.
Yeah. And so it's funny, you know, we go on through the kind of the episode. And so when she gets to the end of the story of doing the PCT, I said, so after, and you know, and shortly after she got to the PCT, she gave up the backpack and bought something that's, you know, like a 40 liter that, you know, that you would need. And so I said, after you finished, did you go back up to that REI and find that guy and just punch him in the face? And she's like, no, I didn't, but I wanted to.
Yes. Amen.
And she is the most kind-hearted person you'll ever meet. So it was funny to, you know, to hear her, you know, getting mad, like, man, I didn't even need that, spend all that money. And So, yeah. All right. Same. Oh, go ahead.
Yeah. Just a backpack, I think, is probably because that's what you're going to be carrying all your stuff in. Yeah.
Here's, you want to see my gear game changer, piece of gear that I have a lot of Hyperlight Z packs, whatever. This right here has changed the way I backpack.
Okay.
And it's the Trekker Joe's water bottle sleeve. And it fits right here on your shoulder straps of your backpack. So you can have one or two because I can't reach back and grab my water.
How come?
And so
shoulder or
No, just because I'm 52. Okay. I can't do it or put it back in. So I saw these.
Okay.
And I bought, I have like eight or nine of them now. And man, just right here. So that piece of gear right there is what I would recommend. Not, I know it should be like, you know, you hear that people say, oh, it should be something between you and the ground. So like shoes or this or that, or you make a very great argument, get that backpack dialed in and comfortable for you. But mine is that Trekker Joe's. I have probably eight or nine backpacks back here all over the place. And, you know, they're good. I mean, I it makes, you know, the mileage that I do comfortable and I can do it, but that that water bottle sleeve holder is changed my life.
It you know what I've heard that they do is, you know, if you have all the weight on your back, then of course it's going to pull you in backwards, but if you can put some of that weight on your front, it will even it out. You know,
man, you nailed it, and I'm glad you brought it up. That is another thing. When in Texas, we have massive water carries. And so having those 2 liters in the front, having, you know, two, it is, it's
the difference.
It's a game changer. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. That weight on the backpack.
Yeah.
All right. Same question. Instead of gear, it's one piece of safety advice that you would get to someone that that's a new hiker or backpacker.
Safety advice? Don't, you know, when you're younger, you think you're invincible, and especially younger hikers, and they think they're invincible. And, you know, like, for example, you know, if there's a, like a, you're on a cliff, and there's a like a break in the trail or something like that, and you say to yourself, I think I can jump over that, you know. when you get older, you go, I don't think so. And so you know, you have more sense about you than taking risk, you know. And so I guess that would be my you know, big safety advice is, you know, be careful of the risk you take. It's not worth it. You know, like a stream crossing or something, you know, you get out there, and especially like in California in the Sierras, when the snow is melting, I mean, those rivers can just be torrential, you know, coming down the hill. And you know, you say to yourself, well, I think I can cross this river. And before you know it, you can get swept down, you know, stream real easy and, you know, be knocked off your feet. And so, you know, just don't take risks, because your life is just not, I mean, your life is worth more than just, you know, hiking a trail. So, you know, just be careful not to take too many risks.
Absolutely. I think my piece of safety advice to someone new is always let someone know where you're going.
Yeah, that's a good one.
When you're going to start, when you're expected to be back.
Yeah.
And when you give someone, and you don't need any money to tell somebody, I'm going to do this or I'm going to do that, right? It's free. It's just you telling someone. And when you give someone that itinerary, don't change it.
Yeah, right, right. Unless you tell them.
Yes. So like for me, I went out to Trailhead. I think it was number 6. It was flooded on the Lone Star Hiking Trail. And so I texted my wife and said, hey, I'm going to probably drive over to Trailhead 9, but we'll probably be finished about the same time. You know, just wanted to let you know. Well, I don't know if the text never went through or, you know, she didn't respond. I just drove home because I'm like, she didn't acknowledge that she received the new itinerary. So I'm not.
Right.
You know, I'm just going to go home. And yeah, probably I could have called or other things. But yeah, I just went home because, yeah, it's that's the biggest thing. Like you see these people, you know, going missing. Well, mm-hmm. No one knew where they went or they had the itinerary, but then they went and did something else. Like, you know, I think you nailed it, too. Just make sure that if you're changing something, tell them.
Yeah. You know, along with that, I know this is probably kind of a little controversial, but I used to carry the Garmin InReach Mini, you know, just kind of kept it right here on my shoulder. And what it did is it sent out a ping. I had it set for 11 minutes and I thought, you know, that's just too often. So I think I had it send out a ping every hour. And my wife could actually go on the internet, you know, on that website and find out exactly where I was by those pings. Now, again, this is probably kind of controversial, but I don't carry the Garmin InReach Mini anymore. On your iPhones, it will, you know, I guess it's got a find me feature on your iPhone. And so my wife can, you know, click on that and find me and she can locate me by my iPhone. And so I'm using my iPhone now. Also, if I need to get in contact with her, even if there's no cell service anywhere, I can get on the satellite. And it works real good. And so actually my iPhone is replacing my Garmin InReach Mini. And one good thing is I don't have to pay a subscription fee.
Yeah. So I'm still a Garmin person. And one of the main reasons is if something happens to my phone, I have that redundancy, that backup that I can still reach out. All right. Are you ready for the very last question of the podcast? This is the most important question. It is my favorite question.
Okay.
All right. So if you could step back and look at your hiking and backpacking journey, everything that you've done, what is the one message that you would want to leave to your family and to everyone that supported you along the way?
Oh, to look back. Well, you know, number one, you know, would be that I miss them. And in fact, that's one of the hardest, you know, emotional and mental things that I have to deal with when I'm on trail is I miss my family. I miss my wife. I miss my grandkids and my kids, you know, something terrible when I'm out on the trail. And so I would want them to know that I miss them and think about them all the time when I'm on trail, you know. But then I think another thing is, Jason, when I'm out, my wife is not in real good health. And so she could never, you know, people ask me, says, did your wife ever go with you on backpacking trips? She's just not able, you know, she's just health-wise, she's just not able to do it. And so when I'm climbing up a mountain and I get to the very top and I look out and just see the most magnificent view that you've ever seen in your entire life, I think to myself, honey, I wish you were here to see this with me. And I, you know, that's the one thing that I really regret, that my wife is not there to share that moment with me.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's thing or not, but that's what I think of when I'm out there.
That's perfect. Yeah. Awesome.
I wish, really and truly, I wish that all of my subscribers, anybody that, you know, knows me or anything, I wish they were with me to see through me what I'm looking at that particular time. And again, that's why I do these videos, you know, to show them, hey, but you know yourself, videos really doesn't do it justice. You know, you're out there and you see a sunrise or a sunset. And like I say, you can see forever. And, you know, you try to record it, but it just doesn't show up the way that you can see it through your own two eyes.
You know, and it's funny that you said earlier, and you're absolutely right, that if you get that one message from somebody that you don't even know, mm-hmm. that just says, thank you.
Yeah.
That I'm not able to do any of this. And through your videos, through all the effort that goes into getting these things published, you know, like I'm able to experience that, it makes it all worth it, you know?
Yeah. Oh yeah, definitely. If just one person said to me, you know, Rev, thank you so much for doing what you're doing. You know, I can't do what you're doing, but I'm living it through you. That makes it all worthwhile. And it is an effort to put out videos, let me tell
you. Oh, yes. To the listeners, it's a pain, but it's worth it. You know, and I've had family members, you know, message me, you know, because I post stuff on Facebook, or, you know, friends on Facebook that have gotten into hiking and backpacking because mm-hmm. they, you know, they've seen it. And man, it makes it all worth the while. So,
yeah. Yeah, definitely. Definitely.
All right, Rev, let me tell you, I already told you this once or twice, but if this was my last podcast, this is how I would want it to end. I value the effort that you put into your channel. I value your experience and what you have to say. If I ever had to stand up and say what I thought your legacy would be, is it someone that always gave more to our community than took. And I can't thank you enough. This means a lot to me for you coming on the podcast. And, you know, golly, we're almost 3 hours and of your precious time. And I can't thank you enough.
Well, as long as it helps one person, it's worth it.
Yeah, for sure. Well, I will let you get back to your day. And again, I thank you. And I don't know if you read the fine print. I don't know if we've talked about it, but, you know, coming on the podcast, it was, we one day will share the trail together. So I am definitely going to do my best to make that happen. So,
amen. Sounds good. Thank you, Jason.
Yes, sir. Have a wonderful rest of your day.
All righty. I will.
And that wraps up another exciting episode of the Trailblazing Texas podcast. We hope you enjoyed the episode today, and stay tuned for our next episode where we will pick back up where we left off and guarantee to uncover many more hiking gems and share many more tips to enhance your experience on the trail. Until then, happy trails and happy hiking.